There's a phenomenon, you could, I guess you could even call it a disease. We're all familiar with it by now. It's household terminology. It's called OCD, Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. And I personally know a number of people, some of them close to me, who either are borderline cases, close to being borderline cases. I think that if we introspect a little bit, that we'll all find that that there's an aspect of all of our personalities that's a little bit OCD. I think that the way that Rabbeinu Shalom does it is because everybody has a little bit of a germ of every type of character trait, which allows him to intuitively feel, understand other people who may be challenged by that bug. I'm certainly no expert, but I think that everybody knows, you know, the classic cases of OCD. You've got the guy who washes his hands, and 2 minutes later he's back in the bathroom because my hands, I must not have gotten all the dirt off of my hands. Or on a more religious note, you have the guy who's saying Shema with the ayin, and he says it's Shema, and then Shema, and Shema, because he didn't get that ayin right. On a more personal level, does she love me? Does she love me not? Does she love me? Does she love me not? Or does my father really love me? Or really, he just gets angry at me all the time. How do I know that, my parents really think that I'm okay? Or on the most religious level, how do I know that the Rabbeinu Shalom is really there? Can I prove that he exists? And the truth of the matter is that if you think about all of these questions, you really realize that the answer is that you can't really know. Chances are you do still have some dirt on your hands. It can never be 100% unadulterated, 100% purely clean. It can't be. And can you really know that somebody loves you? Maybe it's an act. You really know that you said Shema right? And what about the Rabbeinu Shalom? It seems like he's there, unless you're really obstinate about it. But can you really, really prove it? You can't. So the line between sanity and insanity is very, very small. The sane person says, listen, I don't really know, but come on. I mean, he's there, right? The insane person makes himself nuts, obsessing all of the time, and he makes it into a stima, he makes it into a blockage that he can't function normally, because maybe it's not, maybe I'm not clean, maybe I didn't say it right, maybe they don't love me. And so it goes around and around and around and around, and you can't just say, listen, come on, let's just live with the obvious until proven otherwise, and go on with life. This thought was nisara to me in a very, I would say, unusual way this morning, looking through the parsha. And the Baal Nesivos HaMishpat, the Nesivos, wrote a sefer on Chumash called Nachlas Yaakov, where he gives a very unusual pshat in what the Chet HaMeraglim was all about. Everybody thinks about the Chet HaMeraglim in one particular way, comes the Nesivos and says, no, you all missed the boat. It's an entirely different pshat altogether. And perhaps the underlying message in what he tells us is, just look at the obvious and don't get so worked up. Everybody knows about the Chet HaMeraglim. The Meraglim sent by Klal Yisrael, a little bit of a chisaron and emuna. They didn't send small people. Kulam Anashim Rashi Bnei Yisrael Hema. These were the leaders of the Shvatim. These were all great big tzaddikim, but they had something to lose. When they were going to enter into Eretz Yisrael, they were going to lose their positions. And so they had an Egeus, and they go to Eretz Yisrael, and they're Maitzi Diba, and they say bad things, and they get everybody crying, Batir Gnu Ba'alechem, Batisa Koloida Vaitnu Eskoilam Vayivku Aum Balaila Ahu. On that night on Tisha B'Av they cried, and because of that, says Chazal, Tisha B'Av became a Bechila Deris. That's the Chet HaMeraglim. Becomes the Nesivos, and the Nesivos says that there's an underlying Nakuda here. And it's an underlying Nakuda which is very easy to miss. Nishpars from the pasuk that says, what are you going to look for? Ureisem es ha'aretz mahi. Go check out what the land is. The people who are living there, are they strong or are they weak? Number one. What are the cities like? Are they encampments? Little wimpy encampments? In Bemifzarim, were they fortified? So how are the people and how do they live? And what about the land? Hashmenahi, is it fat? Does it give good payers? Imraza, or lousy payers? So three things. The people strong, the building strong, and are the fruits good? Ask the Nesivis four questions. Number one, he says, isn't it weird? Mistama, the Meraglim were going to check out, you know, is this land all that it's cracked up to be? Moshe Rabbeinu told them that this is an Eretz Zavas Chol of a Dvash. They're going to check it out. So we understand that they're seeing whether the Eretz is Shmenehi Imraza. But what about whether the people were strong, whether the cities are strong? What did Moshe Rabbeinu say about that? Moshe Rabbeinu told them very, very clearly that these lands, these people, Moshe Rabbeinu told them that the cities are strong. So what were they going to check? To see whether it's stronger than strong? Moshe Rabbeinu said they're much stronger than you. The people are stronger than you and the cities are stronger than anything that you could penetrate. So why do they have to go check out the cities? Why do they have to go check out the people? Question number two is that they went there and they found exactly what they expected to find. Big people and big cities. And then they went back and they told everybody that. So what's everybody whining and crying about? You went and found exactly what you expected to. Question number three. Why are they going and checking out whether the fruits look nice? Isn't that a strange thing to do? When you go to spy, you want to see whether the people are strong, whether people are not strong. What are you going and checking out whether the fruit is nice for? What kind of story is that? And for number four, which is a famous kasha that they all ask, is Yeshua sent Meraglim too. And when Yeshua sends Meraglim, so he's lauded for it. When Yeshua sends Meraglim, so everything works out great. So what's the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu's Meraglim and Yeshua's Meraglim? The answer to all of these questions, says the Nesivis, is that these spies were not being sent to spy so that they could make a battle plan. They weren't being sent to spy so that they could check up on Moshe Rabbeinu. They were being sent to spy for an entirely different reason. And that different reason was the Chet HaMeraglim. That reason was a reason which they shouldn't have been worrying about so much. And that's why in the end, they got punished. There's a famous story that allegedly happened with Chaim Soloveitchik. People use it in one context. I'll apply it to maybe a little bit of another. Many of you, if not all of you, probably heard this story, but it's a very, very powerful story. They say that once upon a time in Brisk, the beginning of many good stories, so a person came to Reb Chaim, and the person was a self-proclaimed apikurs. And he came to Reb Chaim and he said, listen, I'm not because stop being Shana Torah mitzvahs. And the reason is because of the fact that I have three bomb kashas about the existence of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam and Torah Min HaShemayim, and I can't answer these questions. But maybe you can help me. Reb Chaim said, okay, fine, let me hear. What are your questions? And the guy gives question number one and goes through it. And Reb Chaim says, okay, fine, very good question. And he says, the second one, he goes through it. And he says, okay, very good question. The third one, he says, okay, fine, very good question. So the guy is looking at him, you know, with bated breath. And so what's the answer to my questions? To which Reb Chaim said, I have to ask you one more question. He says, what? He says, your three questions. Did you come up with these three questions before you stopped being Shomer Torah Mitzvahs or after you stopped being Shomer Torah Mitzvahs? He says, I have to be honest with you, it was after I stopped being Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. It didn't feel right, but I stopped, And I came up with these three questions. Rav Chaim said that if that's true, there is no answer to your questions. He says, why? He says, you can't answer them? He says, no, I can answer them. But there is no answer to your questions. But why? You just said that you could answer them. He said, if you came up with those questions after you stopped being Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, your questions are not questions. Your questions are terutzim. Your questions are answers. And there is no answer to an answer. What's the yesod behind that story? The yesod behind that story is that in order for me to tell you something and to communicate with you, there has to be an open mind. But if there's a blockage in the person's mind that says, I don't want to be Mekayim Torah Mitzvahs, and now I'm looking for reasons, I can give you the most beautiful explanation in the world. I can be as clear as day. I can tell it to you in terms that even a two-year-old will understand. You will not hear it. Not only will you fight with me, but you won't even understand it. It won't penetrate into your mind because you cannot be metaretz a teretz. A teretz is a stira, is a stima, I'm sorry. It's a blockage in your mind. And when a person has a blockage in his mind, he can't see the obvious. And that, in a way, is what the Nesiva says happened to Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael was fixated. Klal Yisrael wanted to know for sure. Klal Yisrael, before they did anything, had to be absolutely certain, and therefore they couldn't move. Why Klal Yisrael send Meraglim? They didn't believe Moshe Rabbeinu. They didn't think that it was good. They didn't know that the Canaanim were going to be tougher and bigger than them. They didn't know that they were overmatched. No, chas v'shalom. The reason that they sent Meraglim, says the Nesivis, is because they wanted to know, Klal Yisrael wanted to know before we go in, Hayesh Hashem b'kirbenu im ayin. Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu with us right now? Do we have Siyata Deshmaya? And how do you know if you have Siyata Deshmaya? So a person who goes into a situation with a heart like an Ari, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with him. Like David when he fought Goliath, he gives all kinds of Gishmak examples. David when he fought Goliath, and Yonason when he went to battle, every single person that he sees, he can be 8'9", he looks like a cockroach. All of the Arim, it doesn't matter if they're Mifzarim, they all look like B'machanim. They all look like little nothings, like little tents. The apples, they can be the puniest little apples, but they look big and gorgeous. Because you're seeing it through the eyes of Rabbeinu Shalom. You're seeing it when Hashem is Imachem. And that's why they went in. They wanted to see, is Hashem with us now? But what happened? They went in with the wrong attitude. And therefore, even the things which were good, the big, huge fruits, they looked like monstrosities. The Knanim that should have looked like small people, because after all, Hashem is with you, they looked like big monsters. And therefore they lost it, and they discouraged each other, and they cried. But why did it happen? And what was their mistake? So I'll read you the Lashon of the Nesivos himself. Avo be'emes chatu Yisrael b'shlichus ha-meraglim. Klal Yisrael made a mistake when they sent the Meraglim. Al nasaisam ayeshal Hashem bekirbom. Liyaisam royim shashem hoylechimoyim ba'amud onan yoimim. When a nation sees that every single day HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there in the cloud with them, hoyolam leilech heyach sha'amud onan manhigam. Wherever the onan goes, go along with it. Lele nasaisas Hashem. Don't check if Hashem is with you. Moshe Rabbeinu is with you. You have to believe in Moshe Rabbeinu. What do you have to go check it out yourself again for? You have this cloud leading you around. Hashem is telling you where to go. Moshe Rabbeinu, you don't have a better Rebbe than that. No, I have to check it out myself. I got to see for myself. It's a blockage. It's a blockage. Look at the obvious. The cloud is telling you, go into Eretz Yisrael now. No, I want to make sure I have Siyata Deshmaya. But that's crazy. You just washed your hands 10 times. It's clean already. Hashem is saying, go to Eretz Yisrael. No, I don't know. It's not for sure. I have to see myself. Moshe Rabbeinu says, go in. But did he ever steer you wrong before? He's Moshe Rabbeinu. He's up there on the mountain for 40 days. No, maybe he got wrong shot in the sugya. Maybe Hashem is not with us right now. Let's go into Eretz Yisrael. See the obvious. Don't get so worked up. Memches Dvarim Shatur Niknas Behem. The first of them is Talmud. Talmud learning. Intense learning. Asmada. Constantly. Always. In depth. What's the next one? The next one. Shmias Ha'ezer. Receptivity. A willingness to hear and understand and see the obvious. But a person who has a blockage has to know everything 100% for sure, for himself. And there is no such a thing in the world. So you can't hear. And if you can't hear, you're going to be the biggest masmid in the world. You're going to have the most Talmud, but you can't learn. Give everybody a bracha. It will be zeche, not only the Talmud, lots and lots of hasmada, that each one of us be able to work on this great trait of Shmias Ha'ezer, being able to hear, being able to see, being able to absorb that which is obvious and even more subtle. Not to get sidetracked with things just because of the fact that it's not 100%, 99.9 or more than that, that is 100% clear. Go with the obvious and then move lighter. Go on. And that's the way that you make progress in the world. And Be'ezat Hashem, each and every one of you will go b'chayil l'chayil and become great, great people. Have a good Shabbos.